And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Show presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Derek Van Riper here with Michael Beller. It is Friday, July 2nd. I barely know what day it is. It's weird. We don't normally do this on a Friday. Of course, this is our Sunday waiver show, but with a Sunday being the 4th of July and many people being away and spending time with friends and family, we figured let's get the waiver episode out early. If you check in live on YouTube as we're recording, feel free to drop questions along the way. We're happy to answer those. And it feels like we just did one of these because we did one, well, yeah, 5 days ago. But a few new players have emerged, Beller. So we're going to break down hitters, starting pitchers, and some relievers as well as we move into really what feels like the final week of the first half, even though I think we're technically now in the second half of the season. Let's begin with the bats. Let's begin with a guy that doesn't get as much love as he probably deserves, and that is Wilmer Flores. We were talking about him a bit on Fantasy Baseball in 15, and then that part of the show actually had to be cut to make the show fit into 15 minutes. So I feel happy that we can actually talk about him again. Yeah, because he gets overlooked because he gets cut from podcasts. I think Wilmer is better than people realize. If you go back to 2019, he's slashing 277, 341, 438 against righties since 2019. A lot of the narrative around him is just about the damage he's done historically against left-handed pitchers, which is absolutely part of the story, but he's playing a lot more because of that Brandon Belt injury with that knee. We just don't know how long it's going to be before Belt is back in the picture. And of course, Flores has eligibility at three infield positions, which goes a long way towards filling holes as injuries continue to pile up over the course of the season. So how small of a league are you willing to go where you think Flores is rosterable at this point?
I think pretty easy in 14 and 15ers DVR between Belt and Evan Longoria, right? I mean, he's pretty locked into the lineup right now. So the playing time is going to be there. There's an argument for him in 12s. I think he would have to satisfy some sort of categorical need specifically. I don't think there's enough to him where it's just like, I'll get a little of this, a little of that, and whatever. I think you would have to be looking for something specific or maybe a specific positionally where you need someone who is qualified at all three of these positions to really go after him in a 12, but he's at least on the radar of 12-team leagues, and I think 14 and 15-teamers, with the fact that Belt and Longoria being out of the lineup, has him pretty well situated to remain in the lineup for the foreseeable future, makes him an easy guy to add there.
Yeah, and I don't think we're looking at a situation with Flores where we've seen that skills growth that a lot of the other Giants have shown, especially some of their older players. I mean, Brandon Crawford, Evan Longoria, who you mentioned, Buster Posey, all sorts of career renaissances there with those players. Flores is just kind of doing what he's always done, keeping the strikeout rate low, but he is walking more than ever too, which just adds to his real life value and continues to prop up that playing time. I think the key here is with all the other guys around him playing at higher levels, the counting stats are going to be better than we expected, right? The runs and the RBIs are going to be there at an above average clip. The Giants continue to rank among the league's best offenses, which is just something I did not expect to say as we approached the July 4th holiday here midseason. I know they showed us some signs of this last season, but yet another reason to be optimistic about Flores just is the quality of that supporting cast. I think you could get down to 12-team leagues as long as the schedule is full. I think he could be an on-again, off-again roster sort of player in those formats, but absolutely usable, to say the least. Let's go to Bobby Bradley for a moment, because Bradley was part of the conversation we had yesterday. Zach Meisel joined us on the pod, and I can't imagine that the strikeout rate we've seen so far this season, that's actually who he is going forward. If it is, Bobby Bradley is a really exciting player. If he goes back to the 33-35% range K rate that I think we've seen a lot of upper levels of the minor leagues, he could still be pretty productive because he has that sort of game-changing power. Are we talking about just kind of another in the latest of like the Daniel Vogelback, like that group of players where when he's good enough to stay in your lineup, and when he's bad, he quickly falls off the roster because he starts to lose playing time?
I could see that being the end stage of Bobby Bradley's fantasy value, but the power is so very for real. I mean, if you go back over his entire professional career, going back to, you know, low A in 2015, like this guy has hit for serious power. And what gives me a little bit more bullishness about him is that he's also going to take the walks. If you go back to 2019, a 344 OBP compared with a 264 batting average and a walk rate that was just north of 10%. He was up in the majors for 50 plate appearances or so that season as well, and had an 8.2% walk rate. This year, he's got a 9.8% walk rate. So he's going to walk. And so I think that there's, if Dan Vogelbach is the floor or the worst case scenario for Bobby Bradley, I think something along the lines of Rhys Hoskins is the ceiling for what we see out of Bobby Bradley. And he's already got the 8 homers and the 82 plate appearances. He's going to play every single day. This team is in the race and they need that power. They need that middle of the order bat. He's their first baseman. He is locked in as their first baseman. They're not going to make any sort of moves that would suddenly take away playing time from him. So I'm in on Bobby Bradley. I think this is someone who can really easily find a team in pretty much all fantasy formats right now.
So is Flores versus Bradley a toss-up that you'd consider, where it really depends on categorical need? You get more balance, exactly. Less power from Flores, obviously a lot more batting average. But with Bradley, the power and the run production could be the strengths, and the batting average could easily be a liability. Do you think they're rosterable in similar leagues?
I think they're rosterable in similar leagues, and I think you hit the nail on the head that which one you would go after is all dependent on categorical need.
I think both will come at reasonably small bids. If you're in a fab league, probably 2-3% will be enough to get it done. A few really exciting players either coming up from the minors in the near future, at least we expect them to, or guys coming back from the IL in the mix this week. I think that's where some of the best bats are if you have roster spots to play with. Jarren Duran, not on the roster for Team USA for the Olympics, and he's not on the Futures game roster either. So I would have thought that maybe the Olympics were the reason why he wasn't on the Futures game roster. Since he's not on either one of those rosters, I think it's only going to lead to speculation that he is closing in on taking over as the Red Sox starting center fielder.
Reasonable speculation, I would say, as well. I mean, the Olympics is going to have anyone who's on that Olympic team is not going to be available for a major league team until about the middle of August. And so you would think that Team USA would certainly want Jarren Duran if they could have him. And so, you know, while we can't know for sure, this does have a lot of, you know, if we're reading the tea leaves correctly, this sounds like the Red Sox said to Team USA, maybe even said to the people who run the Futures game, you know, Jarren is going to be playing for us relatively soon. And maybe it's not true. Maybe they would be willing to include him in some sort of blockbuster trade. I don't think that's the case at all, but who knows, right? And so maybe they just don't want him to be playing in these extracurricular sorts of games where he could potentially get injured. But it feels like we could be seeing him at Fenway sooner rather than later. And I think that this is the right time to speculate on him. That's really what we're getting after here in the fantasy world, because if you wait until the call-up happens, you're going to be splurging. And you're going to be spending a huge amount of the fab budget to the point where maybe it's not worth it because of the downside risk. But if you are comfortable and able to go on him a week or two early, which I think we are in that range right now, that's the time to do it.
Yeah, in a few deeper mixed leagues, Tout Wars in particular, I've been burning a roster spot on Vidal Brujan, expecting him to be an impact player coming up from AAA. I would say their more recent performances probably favor Duran overall. You got power and speed, maybe a little more swing and miss in the profile with the power that Duran has added since his season spent at the alternate site in 2020. But if you're looking at those two guys as potential stashes, are you Brujan over Duran or Duran over Brujan?
I think I'm Duran over Brujan ever so slightly, and it's only because I trust Duran's playing time a little bit more. We know what the Rays do in general, and they've, you know, got an outfield that they feel pretty locked in with those three guys, Arozarena, Meadows, and Kevin Kiermaier. Obviously, Wander Franco is going to be playing. I don't care how much he's struggling. So it feels like Brujan's playing time could be a little bit more in peril, whereas Duran, if they make this call, he's playing pretty much every day.
Let's move on to a player coming back from the IL in the very near future. That is Brandon Nimmo. You have this note in our rundown. I can't believe it's this low. He's down to 24% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I mean, that's incredibly low. I think for me, the thing with Nimmo that's really caught my eye is when he's been completely healthy, sort of going back to 2019, he has shown flashes of unlocking 20 home run power.
Yep.
And this is a guy that has great plate skills, has a good batting average floor. It's an improved Mets lineup around him compared to what they've had in previous seasons. So really all signs point to a guy that could put together some of his best per game production yet, especially if he's back healthy and atop this Mets order on an everyday basis in the second half.
I mean, he's just an on-base machine, DVR, and you know that when he's back healthy, he's going to be leading off for them. He had locked himself in to that leadoff spot, and all this guy does is get on base. He's got a 430 OBP before he went on the IL this season, did that across 80 plate appearances last year and 225 plate appearances, a 404 OBP 2019, 254 plate appearances, a 375 OBP 2018, a full season, 535 plate appearances, a 404 OBP. This guy is an on-base machine, and as you said, the batting average has really come along over these last couple of seasons, hitting 318 before he went on the IL last year, hit 280 a season ago. So no matter what sort of rate your league uses, Nimmo is not only going to satisfy it, but is going to be a big time contributor for it. Now you've got a healthy Mets lineup upon which Nimmo will be atop. Like, there's a lot of run scoring upside here. There is the pop that he had, the 17 homers in 2018 attests to that. So I think this is probably, if he's available to you, I'll take it right out the probably. It's more that if he's available in your league, this is the best hitter ad you can make this week.
So you're Nimmo over Duran then, if you have the opportunity to get Nimmo. I mean, I think having had some success in the big league certainly goes a long way towards stabilizing the role, stabilizing production in the shorter term. I do think Duran, because of the stolen base potential, is really intriguing. I mean, if he gets, let's say he hits 8 homers in the second half, you might steal 10 or 12 bags to go along with it. And the standings gained point potential for a guy that can get you 10 or 12 bags while doing other things well too, that really jumps off the page for me. But I would agree with you. I do think Nimmo, as a guy that could post a 400 plus OBP and be atop a good Mets lineup, that does just barely give him the edge over Duran, at least for now, even though both of these guys could be very rosterable in shallow mixed leagues in the relative near future. Let's talk about John Birdie for a moment. If you either want Wilmer Flores and don't get him, or you're looking for a speedier version of someone that you can play at a bunch of spots, Birdie playing a lot. 344, 423, 492 with a couple of homers and 3 steals in his last 19 games. That is a terrific arbitrary endpoint. I love it. But he's just one of those guys. Like because he can play all over the place, he will play a lot. What do you think about Birdie this week, and how realistic do you think it is that he sustains even, like, say, a 270-ish average going forward?
I think he's a fine guy to add for the short term. That is my arbitrary endpoint, and the point of it is that he's playing a lot and he's playing well right now. So if you need a short-term add that satisfies a number of different positional eligibility spots, then he's the right guy to go after because of what he can do. Obviously, like, if you pick up John Birdie now, he could do well for you over the next 10 days and not end the season on your team. That's just where John Birdie and John Birdie types live in the fantasy world. And that's okay. That's okay, especially with all the injuries that we have surrounding us in Major League Baseball right now. I think he's the sort of guy who you could look at. I agree. Like, Wilmer Flores, I'm going for him first, but this is a nice contingency to have if you miss out on Wilmer Flores and still need some infield help in the short term.
If you're looking for some glue that is only outfield eligible, I think Brian Goodwin could actually be pretty helpful. Getting steady playing time in center field right now for the White Sox. It sounds like there's some pretty encouraging news, both with Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez. So, you know, maybe once we get to August, we'll be worried about Brian Goodwin's playing time drying up. But let's make it through July 1st. I think he's one of those guys that is at least good enough to help us in a few categories when he's getting opportunities the way he is right now.
At the very least, he's playing until the White Sox make a trade, because you're right about Eloy and Robert. They're not going to, if and when they're back, that's August and later. So you're not really worried about that right now. Goodwin could lose playing time if the White Sox make a move. The White Sox absolutely need to make a move. This offense has really dried up, and now they're out without Yoan Moncada. I know that's just going to be a short-term thing, but still, this is a team that is desperate for offense. They will be trying to make a move. In the short term, Brian Goodwin's going to play every day, and we know what Brian Goodwin is. We've seen it at multiple stops, so he can do what he can do, and he's going to do it in the short term for you and for the White Sox if you add him, but understand that this is a guy that likely goes away at the trade deadline.
Dalton Varsho, still pretty intriguing in two catcher leagues. He is playing a bit more with this stint in Arizona because of the Carson Kelly injury. Do you expect Varsho to stick even after Kelly comes back following the break?
It's really hard to say. Again, the Diamondbacks are going to be a team that is out there making trades. Like, Eduardo Escobar is not going to be on the Diamondbacks on August 1st. I don't think Eduardo Escobar is going to be on the Diamondbacks on July 25th. And he could be on the White Sox very well easily. So there's going to be some guys off this team who move and who create spots. Now, obviously, Dalton Varsho is not going to play a position that Eduardo Escobar plays, but it just goes in a direction of where this team is headed. And so if this team were exactly as assembled, I wouldn't feel great about Dalton Varsho's playing time once Carson Kelly is back, but I don't think that's going to be the case. And so Carson Kelly's IL stint is a nice bridge to the Diamondbacks making trades, and then once you arrive there at the other side, Carson Kelly comes off the bridge and is playing, and Dalton Varsho has another path to playing time because this team has sent out, you know, two or three regulars. So you combine those, and I think Dalton Varsho is a pretty easy guy to go after in two catcher leagues.
And you could roster him now, knowing that even though there is a path for him to just stick on the roster the rest of the way, there could be a temporary stretch from the Friday after the break until the deadline where he's back at AAA for 10 days or 14 days, and then he's up for good after that. So you do have to sort of bake in that expectation. But yeah, I would say his defensive versatility at least gives him a chance sticking around the rest of the way. And what he was doing as a hitter at AAA was really encouraging. Again, kind of fits into that profile that we saw at the previous minor league stops. Really just a great story to bring up here. Another member of the White Sox, Jake Berger, getting a chance to play a little bit this weekend. Yoan Moncada is dealing with a hand injury. He's only expected to miss the weekend series, and Berger's putting up a nice season at AAA Charlotte. I mean, multiple Achilles injuries. It's been a long, long road for him just to get back on the field again. You know, I think for now he's just an AL-only short-term filler, but if Moncada suffers a more serious injury or if the hand injury turns out to be worse than expected, I actually think Berger has the potential to eventually be relevant in deep mixed leagues, even if that's not the case right now.
And they sent out Yermín Mercedes as well, a guy who has really struggled over the last couple of months too. So maybe if Berger just like hits the cover off the ball this weekend, even if Moncada does come back on Monday or Tuesday, whenever the White Sox first game is next week, maybe Berger finds a way to stick around and just be another bat for Tony La Russa to look to again on a team that is really, really struggling offensively. But I agree, right now he's really just a short-term AL-only ad, and we'll see where we go from there.
Interesting note here from Wrigley Regular. Thanks for dropping in on this Friday before the holiday weekend, by the way. It might be early, but Varsho is starting to look like a quad A player. My only hesitation in putting a tag like that on him is just the way his playing time was set up last year. It was extremely stretched out. It kind of reminds me of the guy he's playing behind right now in Arizona and Carson Kelly, because when Carson Kelly was first getting opportunities in St. Louis, he was backing up Yadier Molina, and he'd get a start here, a pinch hit appearance there. And it was such sporadic playing time. It wasn't even a known bench role. It was you're going to play like once every 10 to 14 days, and that's it. I just find that to be almost an impossible situation for a young player to come up and make adjustments against big league pitching. I would say I'm more encouraged by what Varsho has done in Reno this year than I am discouraged by what he's done last year and this year during his brief chances in the big leagues. But it's a fair concern to have. I mean, there's a massive difference in quality at the two levels. And if they're not going to commit to him in the short term, the growing pains could persist.
Yeah, and he's 25 years old, right? So just turned 20. Actually, today's his birthday. Looking on Fangraphs. How about that? Happy birthday, Dalton Varsho. We're talking about you on the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast on your 25th birthday, and I honestly don't know a greater honor than that. But I'm with you. There's enough here with what we've seen in AAA that even though there is some quad A concerns, I understand those, I want to give him a shot to prove that he's more than just that.
It's the worst birthday ever for Dalton Varsho. I hope he has a great day. But yeah, it's got to be the worst of his life so far.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Beller, let's talk about some pitchers. And there's one in particular that I am really excited about. We tried to tell everybody on Sunday. He's probably coming back up soon because of injuries in that Rays rotation. And he is up. He will start on Friday night. Luis Patino back in Tampa Bay after a nice stretch at AAA, getting pretty deep into those starts, deep at least for a guy that we think would have some overall workload caps on him this season. And I think I said this on Sunday, so I'll say it again. With Patino, because of the time he missed with the finger injury, the Rays can afford to push him a lot more going forward than they would have been able to had he been healthy all season. And I think the need with Tyler Glass now down is pretty clear. Yet again, for the second week in a row, Luis Patino, for me, is easily the best widely available pitcher on the waiver wire for pretty much all mixed leagues.
Not even a question. There's no question as to where you add him. You add him everywhere. My only question is, like, how good would your pitching need to be already to where you wouldn't be thinking about adding Luis Patino? I think you would have to just be totally flush and totally unable to drop almost anyone from your pitching staff. And obviously, it's not like it needs to be a one-for-one, but I'm just saying, like, if you needed the hitters, like, you would have to have a stacked pitching staff to not be able to at least make a run, at least a keep them honest bid on Luis Patino. I think almost everyone, unless you're stacking DeGrom and Brandon Woodruff and Shohei Ohtani all on top of one another. Maybe you don't go after him, but even that person, I think, would probably be able to add Luis Patino. I think almost everyone should be in the Patino market this weekend.
Yeah, he could be one of those guys that delivers ace-like ratios for the duration of the season. Of course, we know the Rays manage their pitchers really well. They won't put him in spots where he is likely to fail. I think that bodes really well, too. So even if that means quicker hooks, if he can get through five, win probability is still there. Obviously, bullpen quality is good. Run support is solid. A ton to like with Patino, even beyond those skills. Projection systems like him quite a bit more than a lot of young pitchers as well. So there's plenty of reasons to be encouraged by him. I hope you got him cheaper last week when we talked about him, because I think you're looking at probably a 10 to 12% bid pretty easily. We're talking about percentage of the original budget. I think it's triple digits in leagues that give you $1,000 in FAB for the season, probably a 120 to even 150 range in more competitive formats.
I think you're totally right on that. And like, I would be very comfortable going to that range. The only way I'm not going to that range is if I am that person who's got three aces and three legit number twos and something like that. And I just don't feel like I need the pitching help. Otherwise, I'm very comfortable going to that range. And I think we see a really strong second half out of Luis Patino. And let me just throw one thing in there, going back to a player we just talked about maybe 10 minutes ago or so, Brandon Nimmo off the IL DVR. He is in the Mets lineup hitting first tonight.
There you go. Right back in the mix. Going to be popular if he has a nice weekend, because that playing time is going to stand out. Of course, the skills we mentioned before, they are well above average for a waiver wire outfielder, even in shallow sorts of mixed leagues. Let's go to Ryan Weathers for a minute. He was back in the big leagues Thursday, made a return start in Cincinnati, and it looks like he gets a two-start week. It's a little earlier than we normally do this, so all schedules very much subject to change. But he went four innings against the Reds on Thursday. To me, that's close enough to going five, where I'm not too concerned about the Padres yanking him early. If he's pitching well, he'll get through the fifth inning. The two starts come home against the Nationals and at home against Colorado. That second start is absolutely as cushy as it can possibly get. And the first one doesn't scare me all that much. Of course, we don't know the status of Trey Turner for early next week. If he's out, that makes that task a bit easier. What is your interest level in Ryan Weathers and relative to Patino? I mean, how much less do you think you'd have to bid to get him?
I think you could go quite a bit less and still get Ryan Weathers. My interest level personally is pretty decently high. I mean, if I can't get Patino, I'd be pretty happy with Weathers. You know, this yet another forearm strain issue for Dinelson Lamet. It feels like this could be the end of the line potentially for him this season. And so now if you're talking about Weathers sticking in this rotation for the rest of the season, we know the offense that's at his back. We know the bullpen that is coming up behind him, a bullpen that just added Drew Pomeranz back from the IL as well. So got a little bit stronger there too. I mean, this is not many guys who you can add at this stage of the season off the waiver wire for a reasonable price are going to carry the start in, start out win upside that Ryan Weathers is going to have. Obviously, he has to get through those five innings that you referenced, DVR, to get you that win upside, but it's a great team that he is coming to. The strikeout upside might not be quite as big as the win upside, but I still think that there is a lot to like in Ryan Weathers. So someone who, unlike some of these other guys we're going to talk about the rest of the show here, can be someone who you like because of this two-start week, but can very easily, very comfortably stick around your team beyond this week too. Like him a lot as a consolation to Luis Patino, or just as a pivot if you don't have the funds to get Luis Patino.
I'm really curious to see where we go with the strikeout rate for Weathers. The Stuff Plus metrics don't love his pitches right now, but the results are quite a bit better than the ERA indicators. Being in San Diego, that ballpark certainly helps. At the very least, you could treat him like a steady home streamer. And for a two-start week where both of those starts are at home, could be a pitch and ditch guy in more shallow formats. But I'm in on Weathers. I think there could still be a step forward from him skills wise because he's so young. I mean, we're talking about a guy still just 21 years old. Obviously,
his birthday today,
a lot
too?
Better. No, he won't turn 22 until December, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was really young when he debuted in the postseason last year. But I think it's more like a 3 to 4% bid in a lot of leagues. Yeah. And again, you could even go less in a 12-team league where you're just going to use him for those two-start weeks and then cut him loose. How about Colby Allard? He's got a two-start week. We talked about the streaming potential for him. I think last week he was at Oakland, pitched reasonably well in that spot, at least got deep into the game. He has the Tigers and the A's both at home as part of a two-start week before the break. Is he a contingency bid for you in places where you're interested in Weathers, or is there just not enough stuff here for you to take the chance?
No, I definitely am taking the chance. I love that start against the Tigers for sure. And then that start against Oakland isn't bad either. And you said he went deep in that game. I believe he only had one strikeout. He gave up a couple of runs really early in that game. I want to say he gave up like two or three in the first, but then settled down and was pretty decent the rest of his time on the mound. So I really don't mind that start either. I think this is a really nice guy to go after. Easily prefer Weathers, but he's my next guy up. Like this two-step, assuming that he stays in line to see both of these teams.
Yeah, I love looking at strikeout minus walk rate. And in the case of Colby Allard, we're talking about a guy that has an 18% K minus BB percentage. It's actually a really good mark in 52 innings this season. I don't think he's overpowering. I don't think there's another level in terms of Ks, but I do think what he's doing right now makes him viable, especially with these matchups. So I would say a similar bid to Weathers, but probably prioritized just behind Weathers if you're setting up a contingency bid. A few one-start pitchers that are intriguing to me. How about Drew Smyly at the Pirates for his last start before the break? I think he's been pretty frustrating this year because I thought the situation for him in Atlanta was going to be such that we'd use him constantly. I thought maybe only in the toughest of matchups he would end up on the bench and we'd be talking about him as a possible top 35, top 40 starting pitcher. That hasn't happened yet. But do you think it's still a possibility that Smyly gets there over the course of the second half?
I could see him being a top 35 pitcher from the rest of the way in, and he's looked really good. And maybe really good is a bit of an overstatement. He's looked solid over his last five starts, really the month of June. He had a pretty nice month of June. Most recently, six innings of one run ball with three strikeouts against the Reds. Start before that, 5 2/3 shutout with five Ks against the Cardinals. Before that, five innings with six Ks, gave up a couple of runs against the Marlins. And I think that's basically what you can expect from him. I think if those are your expectations, if that's the sort of pitcher you're looking for, I think Smiley can be that over the second half. So maybe you're not just picking him up for this start against the Pirates. Having said that, you have to love this start against the Pirates. So definitely think he's an easy, easy guy to go after. And I think unless, if you need pitching volume, I could see why you would go Colby Allard over Drew Smiley. If you just need a good outing, I would rather take the one Smiley against the Pirates than the two Allard against Detroit and Oakland.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Allard actually has a much better K-minus BB percentage than Smiley. Ks have not been there for Smiley so far this season. I do think we'll get a bit of a recovery there. The projections are suggesting that as well. There is ratios risk. That is very clear. Mm-hmm. We've seen enough of the ups and downs from Smiley to know that the downs can be pretty bad. That being said, he is extremely streamable against the Pirates. It's weird looking at his stuff plus chart. He's all over the place. I got to ask Eno about him. Like, what causes a guy to be above average in terms of stuff plus half the time and below average the other half the time? Stuff quality of pitches shouldn't change that much. Like, command, yeah. I can see
command,
being up and
sure.
Down. Yeah. Stuff shouldn't fluctuate that much. So I'd love to know what's going on in the underlying numbers with Smiley. Until we find that out, still useful in this spot. One of the other great streamers for the upcoming week is Merrill Kelly, a home start against the Rockies. I don't even like Merrill Kelly that much, Beller, but how do you not?
I mean, how do you not? Exactly. I mean, like with this lineup, how do you not? This is a very easy guy to get in there. This is a pitch and ditch sort of situation, but I mean, this is an easy one. And I don't think I would still go Allard over him, but I understand the argument. Again, if it's just quality and not quantity that you're after, I understand the one start of Kelly against Colorado argument over the two starts of Allard, given who his opponents are. But that's really what this is all about. And I actually don't typically love making matchup only plays DVR. I really like to lean on talent rising. That's just how I am, how my brain is wired, and generally I feel like that's a better path to travel down. But this is such a good matchup that it can be one of the few spots where I am comfortable going matchup only.
I think if I had to choose one that I had blindly would start for the next three starts between Kelly and Smiley, I would actually consider Kelly, even though he's on the lesser team. I think I trust his baseline skills just a bit more, but I would prefer to go that pitch and ditch route. I'd much rather look for an upgrade after this good matchup against the Rockies if I'm able to do that. The other name that came up this week because he's got a spot in the Angels rotation is Jose Suarez. Dylan Bundy, of course, going to the bullpen at least for now. Unfortunately, Suarez draws the Red Sox at home on Monday, and with the Angels using a six-man rotation, that would be his only turn prior to the All-Star break. So I just can't really imagine a scenario outside of AL-only leagues where I'm not really worried about the ratios where I would actually pick him up and use him for that spot.
Agree, and there's really no argument even like about a upside down the line because of the fact that this is the only start he's going to get before the All-Star break. Then we get the All-Star break, we totally reset. Maybe Dylan Bundy just figures things out in the bullpen over the next 10 days or so, and they're comfortable throwing him back into the rotation after the All-Star break. So AL-only volume chasers, sure, everyone else should stay away from this one.
Yeah, even though the strikeout-to-walk ratio looks pretty good so far for Suarez, I would advise caution based on the stuff plus numbers. Doesn't look like he's the kind of guy that's going to maintain numbers that are quite that good. Looks like more of a typical swingman, at least by those metrics. So if you are bidding on Suarez, it's a near min bid in those ultra deep leagues. There's not really a lot of upside to chase, at least based on some of the things that we're looking at this point. So interesting story, and who knows when we'll see Dylan Bundy back in the rotation. I didn't think it was going to get this bad for Bundy. I think I've said it on every one of our podcasts. I just didn't see that as something that would actually happen to him this year, even if I wasn't necessarily the guy that wanted Dylan Bundy everywhere back on draft day.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, Beller, let's get into some relievers here before we close things out for the holiday weekend. There's a few guys on the brink of possibly closing out games for their respective teams. J.B. Bikauskas, we have talked about him before on this show. He's inching closer and closer to taking on a prominent role for the D-backs. This is a team that will trade away as many veterans in that bullpen as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. If you go back to spring training, Bikauskas looked like maybe their most dominant reliever. And I think as soon as he is ready, that is his job for the foreseeable future. Could easily see him leading this team in saves in the second half, but also in 2022 and 2023 as well.
Agree completely, and I don't see any way that anyone else leads the team in saves. I mean, they absolutely need to just throw him into high leverage situations for the second half of the season, and anything that's not nailed down is gone from Arizona, and people are going to be interested, I think, in, you know, Joakim Soria. Maybe Ryan Buchter could find somewhere to go. Maybe Noah Ramirez could find somewhere to go. But even if they don't, right, like Richard Rodriguez is getting traded. Yimi Garcia, he's probably getting traded. So it's maybe easier to speculate on saves in those spots because we know those guys are going to get shipped out. Even if these guys don't get traded, Arizona absolutely needs to be putting J.B. Bukauskas in those spots because unless they're bad for a long time or he is not anywhere close to what we think he is, he's going to be part of their next competitive team. So let's see what he can do in these high leverage spots in the moment, but low leverage in terms of what the actual wins and losses mean to the 2021 Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's get him that run. I do think that he is the closer for this team for the second half. Once that arm shows itself to be totally healthy, totally good, he's healthy, he's the closer, and one of the guys who could really make a big impact in fantasy leagues, even if he isn't getting a ton of save opportunities because of how bad this team is.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of obstacles in his way towards claiming that spot. That's where there actually is some appeal in stashing him now, because you're not waiting for those trades necessarily. He could take over the role even prior to some of those guys actually being pushed off of the roster. You mentioned that Pirate situation. If you're assuming that Richard Rodriguez gets traded, are you stashing Kyle Crick or are you stashing David Bednar?
This was something Al and I talked about on an episode of Fantasy Baseball in 15 earlier this week. I think Bednar's the better pitcher, but just the usage suggests that Crick would be the guy who would get the first crack at the job. And I think that's the better way to go. Just, we can't be inside the head of managers. We can't be inside the heads of pitching coaches. What we have to go on is usage and performance. And I think usage is the better route to go down when we're talking about speculating on closers. So for that reason, I would speculate on Crick. Now, I will say that I'm not super jazzed about being a week early on this situation, right? I mean, Richard Rodriguez has pitched very well this season. He's going to be one of the better closers available, going to be one of the better relievers available. I think most likely wherever he goes, he's probably not going to close, but he's going to be one of the better relievers available. And so even though Pittsburgh's going to want to trade him, I don't know if there's a ton of urgency for them to be leading the market. I don't know if there's a ton of urgency for them to be out there on July 2nd trading Richard Rodriguez. I think they could slow play this, let some teams get desperate, need a reliever, and then come July 25th, 26th, 27th, they could maybe get a better price for him because there are teams that are going to be looking around saying, oh man, we're really good. We need a reliever. We need another back end of the bullpen arm. Let's go get Richard Rodriguez. And so I think this is one that I want to let it play out a little bit, especially since it is so uncertain if it's going to be Crick or Bednar. But if and when the time comes, I lean toward Crick because of the way he's been used this season.
I hadn't thought about this a whole lot prior to this week, but with the Angels underperforming yet again this season, could Raisel Iglesias be on the move? You know, I think that could open up some save opportunities on a not terrible team in the second half as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's one I haven't thought about till this very moment, but I think that he's someone who could be on the move. He's someone who we should look out for. I mean, honestly, you know, the Cubs are now 6 games back of the Brewers. Like, if things go south, if things continue going bad for the Cubs, Craig Kimbrell would be by far the best reliever available. And then the Cubs could make that move, and then we could be looking at a Ryan Tepera or an Andrew Chafin closing games out. So that's another one to keep your eye on. If things go, I mean, if the Cubs get into the trade deadline or the All-Star break 4+ games out still from the Brewers, I think they kick off the second half ready to sell. And so if that becomes the case, Craig Kimbrell could easily find himself elsewhere, and then the Cubs become another team where we'd speculate on saves.
Now, you are adamant as a Cubs fan that Jed Hoyer is hoping for clarity on being able to move players, right?
I mean,
you don't want to see this team a couple games out where they talk themselves into either staying the course or making really small moves to improve. You kind of want them to choose a firm direction, and it seems so unlikely that they would push a lot of chips in part because of the limitations of what they could do trading pieces from that farm system. I do wonder if Craig Kimbrell gets moved almost regardless, because that's not necessarily waving the white flag. That's just moving a guy that you could not have possibly traded nearly a calendar year ago. Like, moving Craig Kimbrell with that contract last summer would have been impossible. Moving him now, the window is open, and frankly, you might actually get something decent back as part of the return. At the very least, you're not on the hook for the rest of the contract.
I think you get something pretty good back. I mean, this Craig Kimbrell dominant stretch really goes back to like the beginning of August last season. He started out the shortened season pretty uneven, but then mid-July, early August, he got good. And then this year, he has just been one of the best relievers in all of baseball. He has been absolutely dominant. I do think that Jed Hoyer's nightmare, I think maybe Jed Hoyer loses sleep, wakes up in a cold sweat where he has nightmares of like waking up on July 24th being 2 games behind the Brewers. I think that's on, if you could get him to tell you the unvarnished truth, I think that's the last thing he wants. I think he either wants to be somehow in first or 10 games back. I do not think he wants to be in a position where he has to still not be able to sell guys, looking at it like, come on, Jake Arrieta is the worst pitcher in the majors right now. Like, Devin Williams would somehow be an upgrade for the, or Trevor Williams would be an upgrade for this rotation if he got healthy. Like, the Cubs aren't doing anything with this rotation. Let's be realistic. He wants to sell. I think the worst thing that could happen to him and maybe this franchise long term is if they're like 3 games back from the Brewers and unable to sell because they're in it in the standings.
Well, I hope for your sake and the sake of Jed Hoyer getting lots of rest that they're 12 games back at the deadline and they can just
for your get sake rid of as too, many my players. Friend.
Yeah, I mean, you might as well just hand it over now. If you can just give away the NL Central to the Brewers, please do. I have no complaints.
Who's
going to
win the NL Central? The team that's got Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burns, and Freddie Peralta, or the team that's got the old husk of Jake Arrieta, Kyle Hendricks, and Albert Alzolay? You tell me. Which team's going to win the NL Central?
Well, you know, I've got one team that I would bet on pretty heavily of those two, but I'm not going to count my chickens before they hatch either. All right, so you're on Tapera. Does Tapera stay? If they trade Kimbrel, are you sure Tapera actually stays, or does he get traded too?
I would say there would be a risk to him, but he's on the IL right now. So I think that increases the likelihood that he ends up staying. I think he would have to get back, show himself healthy, and pitch well before the deadline. Even if it's not a serious injury, that's a pretty quick turnaround to do all of those things. So I would bet on him staying, and I think he would be the first guy up if they do ship out Kimbrel.
Yeah, and I think for the Anaheim situation, I think Mike Myers would be the next guy up for me if they were to trade Iglesias, but there's a similar amount of risk that you'd have in Pittsburgh or Chicago, where Myers could be among the players the Angels need to consider trading as well. And they're just in a weird spot as a franchise. I talked about that with Keith Law on the Athletic Baseball Show. It's because you've got Trout, you've got Ohtani, you've got Rendon. You've got this big core that you should be trying to win now with. And the secondary players have just underwhelmed so much that it puts them in this awkward spot. They can't push a ton of chips in because they don't have a great system to deal with. And they need guys like Joe Adell to become major league ready sooner rather than later to make that offense even better. Mm-hmm. They need to find a way to develop some pitching above all else. The starting pitching continues to be a problem for the Angels. So that's why I think, you know, if they're still a little below 500 come deadline time, Iglesias maybe at least gets them something back for the future, and they can reevaluate and go into free agency and try to patch some holes up during the offseason. And Iglesias would be, I mean, the kind of rare closer who stays a closer on his new team.
Yep.
At least there's a much better chance that he'd still be there, because entering the season, I know things were pretty bumpy for him early on. He was a top five closer for me back in March. Mm-hmm. I thought he had that kind of ceiling. And I think the last 2 months have made it seem more like that wasn't a ridiculous call. The first month of the season, absolutely brutal, but he's kind of settled down here after that slow start.
Yeah, totally with you. Kimbrel obviously would be that guy as well. And yeah, the Angels, man, they're in a similar position to what we talked about with Matt Gelb, our Phillies beat writer, on yesterday's episode, where like they're pot committed to contending. Like they can't really tear it down. And so Iglesias is also the sort of guy who, you know, would be a future piece. He's still just a reliever, but it would be, maybe they could get someone who is ready to contribute to the 2022 Angels right away, because with all that talent they've got, like you can't not try to compete when you have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. You can't be a tear it down team when you have those two guys. So they really are in a position where they have to try to compete for at least the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I was thinking the same things about St. Louis too. If they reach the point where they want to start looking ahead to the future, but their two best relievers are guys they'll have on the roster for a long time. You know, Alex Reyes and Giovanni Gallegos, I wouldn't expect those guys to go anywhere in a midseason trade. So there probably won't be a clear option to go after to get saves in St. Louis as a result of fallout from the trade deadline. We got to go. It's time to go enjoy the holiday weekend. Hopefully everyone out there can do the same. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you should get one. It's $3.99 a month to get in the door at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast on Twitter. He is at M. Beller. I am at Derek Van Riper. Thanks for listening to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are back with you Tuesday with Under the Radar.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.